You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Tuesday afternoon. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show, and I am your host, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can always watch the show as well by going to Civic Media's YouTube channel, or you can check out at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, the Book of Faces, and X. You can join us on each of those platforms, and of course, via the old-fashioned way, 855-752-4842. That is both the phone and text line. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I'm going to be joined by Angela Lang at 4:30 today. We're going to talk about her experiences at the No Kings March and some of her organization, Block's, recent activities to keep people engaged in this very difficult time for all involved on any side of any issue, as well as some of their upcoming events for this weekend. Can't wait to have that conversation. And at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by Chicago attorney Robert Held. He was at one of the protests at an ICE facility outside of Chicago in recent weeks, where he was detained without charges by ICE for 8 hours. Held, again, without charges, without being told why he was being detained, and certainly without a phone call. We're going to talk to Mr. Held about his time in detention, courtesy of ICE. We've got some breaking news to start off this afternoon. According to reporting by NPR, a federal judge in San Francisco has now indefinitely halted the Trump administration's, and let's be clear here, Russ votes, mass layoffs of federal employees, ostensibly tied to the government shutdown. This decision came almost 2 weeks after this same U.S. federal court judge temporarily paused thousands of layoffs, or RIFs, reductions in force, at agencies where the federal employee unions that had brought the lawsuit have members or bargaining units. Interestingly, in court on Tuesday, an attorney representing the Trump administration pushed back, asserting that the executive branch can conduct RIFs at any point in time, and certainly before, during, or after a lapse in congressional appropriation to achieve the president's policy priorities, and then it's just good policy to do so. Weird. Yeah, not the law, basically, at all. The attorney for the plaintiffs in this lawsuit responded by saying that a lapse in appropriations due to a shutdown is not, obviously, the same thing as an elimination of statutory authority, and that the government or the executive branch can't simply tell agencies they no longer need to comply with congressional mandates. Watch this space, because I'm going to come back to this a little bit later in the show. Simply because you're in a shutdown does not mean that agencies do not have to comply with congressional mandates. You know, like SNAP funding? Okay, I'll come back to that. But just breaking news that just coming out within the last hour, a little bit over an hour. In other breaking news, remember when Donald Trump was like, yes, I have brought peace to the Middle East. Nothing more going on here. Well, yeah, not really. Israel is launching and has launched new airstrikes in Gaza. Again, so much for that peace treaty, breaking a fragile 3-week ceasefire. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the strikes, calling for, quote, immediate powerful attacks, and accused Hamas of violating the truce by targeting Israeli forces and mishandling the return of hostage remains. Hamas denied these claims, saying Israel is simply trying to back out of the deal. Okay, in case we all forgot, here's what Trump had to say when he was, you know, beating his chest about deserving the Nobel Peace Prize about this, I guess, no longer in existence peace treaty. Take a listen. It's cut 49.
Everybody is happy, whether it's Jewish or Muslim or the Arab countries. Every country is dancing in the streets, and it's a point in time I don't think you'd ever see it again. They've never seen it for 3,000 years. If you like one group, you don't like the other group. And if you like the other group, you don't like the first group. And this is the first time they've ever seen where everybody is unified, because, as you know, we're going to Egypt after Israel, and we're going to meet all of the leaders of the very powerful and big countries and very rich countries and others, and they're all into this deal. Everybody's into it. It's never happened before. So I would say this is a lot tougher. But we'll see how it all works.
Mr. President,
barely not working out much at all. Not so much. Those very rich countries, which Donald Trump and his family are very interested in doing all sorts of lucrative side deals with, because, of course, there's no specter of a conflict of interest at all. Yeah. So that's happening. Also, according to four senior Department of Homeland Security and Trump administration sources, there is a mass removal, purges, if you will, going on at the top levels of ICE leadership around the country. Apparently, up to 12 ICE field office chiefs have been removed and reassigned in an effort to increase deportation numbers. This is being, apparently, according to reports, being led by Corey Lewandowski. You know, that guy with zero law enforcement experience, zero immigration experience, never worked for ICE or the Department of Homeland Security or Customs and Border Patrol. Yeah, that guy. That disgraced dude who shoved a woman. Yeah, you might remember him. Who's allegedly engaged in some years-long affair with DHS Secretary Kristi Noem. Yeah, that guy. He's the one that decides who stays and who goes. Apparently, these ICE regional office chiefs are going to be replaced by Customs and Border Patrol officials who have been handpicked by Lewandowski and Noem for their aggressiveness and, frankly, some of their controversial tactics. Also in the mix here, making some of these decisions, is Border Patrol Commander Greg Bovino. Here are some of the ICE field offices that have had their chiefs removed. Again, this is reportedly Los Angeles, Phoenix, Philly, Denver, El Paso, San Diego, Seattle, Portland, and New Orleans. This is interesting. It's a little bit under the hood because most of us don't distinguish in our head between ICE agents and Customs and Border Patrol agents. But for folks that have worked in these different agencies, which are both divisions of the Department of Homeland Security, they do very different things. If you talk to folks that know about this, ICE agents typically conduct fairly well-researched, very targeted operations. These are more like law enforcement raids that are targeting folks that have criminal convictions already or who have been charged, i.e. with probable cause determinations in compliance with the Fourth Amendment, charged with serious criminal offenses, or who already have active deportation orders that have been at minimum reviewed by an immigration judge. Okay, but they know who they're targeting for detention and arrest related to either the criminal charges that meet the Fourth Amendment standard of probable cause determinations or have an active deportation order issued by an immigration judge. They often conduct surveillance. Again, think more along the lines of law enforcement. Customs and Border Patrol agents, on the other hand, are more known for these large-scale, round-em-up type operations. If you talk to folks who have worked in this space, I can summarize this by saying, CBP folks, cowboys. ICE, sometimes cowboys, but more operating like law enforcement, more targeted, more individual-specific. They know who they're going after. It's not just a round-em-up, worry about that pesky Constitution later. So this would be a big deal for long-standing career ICE officials who are leading these regional ICE offices to be removed at the direction of Corey Lewandowski and replaced by cowboy-type hand-picked, known aggressive, constitutionally suspect CBP agents. Not a good sign. And in another fit of constitutional unaccountability, Pete Hegseth hasn't quite had enough tamping down of our ability to hold the Department of Defense and our government more broadly accountable. Apparently, U.S. military officials that are involved in Donald Trump's expanded Latin American operations have been asked to sign NDAs. This is unheard of. In effect, this is a doubling down on this attempt to keep American people from being informed about what our military is up to. Now, just a couple of things worthy of note here. Of course, military officials cannot ever share classified operational details. They can't share classified operational details for operations that have already happened. What is the point of the NDAs other than to intimidate? There are already all kinds of secrecy laws in place. Again, this is coming in the wake of the fact that the Pentagon has deployed the Gerald Ford Carrier Group and about 10,000 troops in and around the Caribbean for these, quote, counter-narcotics missions, though experts say that the use of military force in this way is not being used for folks that are legitimate or have had a factual finding that meets the international law of war standard to declare someone an enemy combatant. Wow. We're going to get into that discussion as well a bit later. I will be getting into SNAP, the shutdown, the ACA benefits, as well as numerous recent comments by none other than Republican Senator Rand Paul about the fact that these are nearly certainly illegal killings that are happening in the Caribbean. We're going to get into the ACA in a bit, as I promised, likely it at 5:30. But I did want to just share one other bit of local news before we take care of some of our first set of messages this afternoon. Governor Evers' $1 billion plan to overhaul Wisconsin's aging prison system advanced this afternoon with bipartisan support after a subcommittee approved $15 million for analysis and planning. It's about time. Governor Evers said, let's just get this GD done, please. We've been talking about this for too long. That sounds like Tony, doesn't it? We'll continue with more of today's headlines. We'll get into AG Call's lawsuit against the administration next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin Attorney General Call has joined with 22 other attorneys general, along with three governors today, in filing a lawsuit demanding that the Trump administration use emergency funds to, you know, make sure people don't go hungry. That is to fund the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, and to keep it funded during the governmental shutdown. You remember at the beginning of the show, I talked about the fact that simply because the government is shut down doesn't mean that federal agencies can just stop doing their jobs. That's part of the irony of the shutdown. And I don't know about you, but I think making sure people have food on the table is pretty essential if we're talking about essential services that the government needs to continue to perform despite the shutdown. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The Republican talking point over the last few days and over the weekend has been like, oh, we don't have the legal authority to do that. Again, that is incorrect. And the problem here, like many problems in this administration, is the fact that the Trump administration itself in May through September had already issued guidance in anticipation of a potential shutdown that said that the USDA has a requirement to continue to fund SNAP. Okay? This came from the Office of Management and Budget's General Counsel's office. Okay? I mentioned yesterday that I went and found that, and I wanted to read a tiny bit of it to you because, again, the Trump administration itself said that USDA has the obligation to continue to fund SNAP, potentially using these contingency funds or other funding, even if there is a shutdown. Here is what was on the USDA's website until September. It referenced the OMB General Counsel's letter, saying this: the OMB General Counsel provided a letter to USDA on May 23rd, stating that there is a need to obligate benefits for SNAP for the subsequent fiscal year, meaning the November 1st into 2026 fiscal year, during the month of September, to guarantee that funds are available for program operations. And here it is, even in the event of a government shutdown. They continue. This is Trump administration's own guidance. Congressional intent is evident that SNAP's operation should continue since the program has been provided with a multi-year contingency fund that can be used for state administrative expenses, meaning the states pay the SNAP benefits and then get reimbursed, to ensure that states can also continue operations during a federal government shutdown. It goes on further. These multi-year contingency funds are also available to fund participant benefits in the event that a lapse occurs in the middle of the fiscal year, which we are nowhere near, but they're covering that as well. I.e., you do a continuing resolution until December and then another shutdown occurs, you know, in the middle. It says that, yep, you can use them for that too. To fulfill this congressional intent, it is necessary that a limited number of food and nutritional service employees be exempted from furlough to support program operations. So you also can't furlough the employees that administer this program. Gosh darn it. And now, of course, they've deleted that guidance. It's magically disappeared because why? Apparently, Republicans want to see people go hungry. Kurt from Madison. I'm so angry, Kurt. Their own lawyers said that they can use the contingency fund in the USDA. But now, of course, it's not politically convenient. So they've deleted it. What do you got for us this afternoon, Kurt?
Well, I'd like to use the Orange Blob's own words. He's using ICE because his argument is that we have criminals that are roaming the streets, wrecking people's lives, endangering their lives. Well, I think that by not providing food to the people you're supposed to be protecting as the president of the United States, you are endangering their lives. It seems pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the laws aren't written the way it is, but I mean, if the president's sole primary purpose is to ensure that those of us within this country are protected, well, start protecting. And one of those
feed the people
is health care and food. Seems pretty straightforward.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kurt. To me, the complete lawlessness of all of this, the complete opportunism, the blame shifting. We are in this situation because Republicans have gutted healthcare in the big brutal bill. Republicans have gutted SNAP. I'll get into more of that once we talk with our guests this afternoon. But the fact that their own general counsel from the Office of Management and Budget in May said unequivocally, clearly, congressional intent is that this program must remain funded. You can't furlough people that are necessary for administering the SNAP benefits. That is what the contingency fund is for. That is what the congressional intent is. And all of a sudden that legal guidance goes poof. It's ridiculous. CJ, why shouldn't the Trump administration follow its own legal guidance?
I just turned your show on. I really didn't expect it. I'm in Florida, Maggie. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. Why shouldn't the Trump administration follow its own OMB general counsel's legal guidance and fund SNAP? Because that's Congress's intent in creating the contingency fund. Seems pretty clear.
Well, there's only one party that's keeping the government closed, and that's not the Trump.
Is the Republican Party, because they refuse to even negotiate. The president's not even in the country. How do you negotiate with a guy that's not even there? That's who's keeping the government open to do what? Deprive people of food and health care? Come on, man. Sorry, CJ. We got to go do a few messages. Thanks for playing this afternoon. We're going to talk with Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing Communities about resilience, about her experience at No Kings, and about some of the great events that BLOC has coming up. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to listen to some MAGAs lose their mind, or rather watch them lose their mind, you're going to want to watch this show on YouTube, because the comments are fascinating. It's interesting, and I'll get into this a little bit with my special next guest. It's so strange. When I get into debates, whether it's with callers or folks on our text line or folks on our social media accounts, I rarely get much engagement on the substance of what I'm saying. It's mostly, you know, ad hominem attacks about my looks and all sorts of variety of other nonsensically totally irrelevant matters. But enough said about that. You can check out the hater raid that's getting directed my way by watching the show on Civic Media's YouTube channel. With that, very privileged, very happy, as always, to be joined by my good friend and yours, Angela Lang, the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. Welcome back, Angela.
Thanks so much for having me. I feel like it's been a while. We've been both so busy.
Yes, it has been a hot second, but we did get to share a stage together and share some time together at the No Kings protest a couple of weekends ago. I can't believe it's been that long. Yeah. But I just wanted to ask you, in your newsletter, you talked about the fact that you decided to get and show up at and get fully engaged with this second No Kings protest. And I wanted you to share a little bit about your thinking and how you came to that decision and just overall what your experience was at this second No Kings protest alongside 7 million fellow patriotic, America-loving, but clear-eyed fellow citizens and residents of this fine country.
Yeah, so I feel like this is a little bit like vulnerable, but I'm just going to be honest in that this was my first No Kings Day. I'm an activist. I'm an organizer. I do this. It's not like I didn't know about the first one. But part of me was like, ooh, I'm getting similar vibes as like other mass protests that I don't know if they're fully aligned with my values. And so I saw and I talked to a lot of folks that had went there. And some folks were like, yeah, they were thanking the police, or people were complaining that there wasn't like bouncy houses, or people were walking through with glasses of wine. And it was these things that I kind of clocked internally before that I was like, this is why I'm not going. I was like, this feels like it might not fully be my space. And I'm going to be honest, after November, a lot of Black women specifically said, we were like, no, we're on sabbatical. This, y'all created this problem, y'all figure it out. And I have a job to do, right? But like part of me resonated with that. And so I sat the first one out. And the second one, there were a lot of lefty progressive type of folks that were like, hey, we would like to have you speak. We're going to, you know, share this thing, the stage, and we're going to share time. And it was through relationships that I had that I was like, oh, okay, I feel like this is comfortable. This is a big enough tent where I could say what I feel and not feel ostracized or whatever. I've been to Women's March events in Milwaukee specifically, where I called out, you know, some transphobes, and like I got just right. I have the finger wave and all of that. So sometimes I recognize that not my analysis may not be everyone else's analysis, but that if there's an opportunity and an open mind, that's where I feel like I can engage. And it was great. I saw so many people. I gave out so many hugs.
Yes.
I took pictures with like the goth baddies, you know, for democracy and unicorns. And it was really good. And it was a bright spot for me. And I'm really glad that I came.
I'm so glad to hear that. I too, you know, when I think about my involvement in either, you know, getting signatures for a candidate, for example, or my involvement in marches, I have never been to a march or stumped for a candidate where I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I think about everything, right? There's no, but there's no perfect candidate. There's no perfect political party.
Right.
And I think my hope is that amongst folks that are deeply concerned about what we're seeing, that it's okay that we have other disagreements, right? But that the tent right now needs to be open and big to folks that are clear-eyed about what we're seeing from this administration, and that there is far more agreement about the things that are wrong here. And we're going to continue to have all kinds of debates internal within the, quote, Democratic Party, within what I'm going to call incrementalist moderate Dems and more progressive Dems. But that the point is, right now, there is existential threat, and it's happening every day. In that same breath, and I have been pretty active online and on my own social media accounts, especially on LinkedIn, in defending the right, especially of Black women, to take, as you put it, a sabbatical. This has been so targeted, I think, especially at Black women, and the results, the economic results of this hate has been felt the greatest, as with every time there is regression in this country, as well as economic contraction, borne the hardest by far, most acutely, by Black women. So I was extremely thrilled and super humbled to, I think you and I spoke almost like back to back.
Yeah, yeah, I spoke right after you, which like, you know, I don't like that, but okay.
Oh. Well, at least they have your entire remarks on YouTube. I mine got somewhat cut off there. So just means there's suspense for the next time.
There we go. You got to check out both of our speeches next time, assuming we're both invited and asked to speak again.
Who knows?
Anyone that's listening.
Who knows? Way,
that could be a draw. I don't know.
It is getting together.
And also, shout out to Earl Ingram, who was like the MC, who was also a part of the Civic Media family. And
yes,
it was really great to see him. And I was like, okay, Earl, Maggie, me. And I was like, okay,
all right, we can do this.
The Civic Media representation, honestly. Yeah.
Big, big love for Earl. He is in a sweet spot as an MC, there's no doubt. And anytime Earl's name comes up, I always have to tell people the only reason I am on the airwaves at all is because of Mr. Earl Ingram. Mm. So I will have a lifetime long hat tip to Earl and a big thanks. It was, I think, again, a very big tent type of event.
Yeah.
Lots of different viewpoints represented there. But again, an incredibly peaceful event focused on what we are facing as a country, not as Democrats or Republicans, but what we're facing as a country and as a democracy, small d. So I just wanted to say, I always am impressed with your candor, Angela, in talking about these things in your newsletter, and how you share and invite people into these discussions. If you have a question or a comment for Angela or I, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We got Jack from Merrimack. Jack, say hello to Angela. What you got for us this afternoon?
Hello to Angela. You pointed out one thing, that it's really hard to negotiate with somebody that's out of the country. Well, it's really hard to reopen the government if one of the houses of Congress is not in session, and our lovely representative, and this doesn't get enough press, our lovely representatives have been on vacation, in recess for, 5 weeks now? I think something like that.
It's longer than that. Of the past like 90 plus days, the House has been out of session for more than 80 days. I want that to like sink in. And in fact, Cal, if you can try to grab the sound, this is, I don't have the cut number, Cal. It was the last Johnson whiny sound that I added late. If you've got it, give me a thumbs up and let's roll that sound. But here is Mike Johnson complaining about the, we're doing work. Well, then bring the House back into session and do the work and sit down at a negotiating table with Democrats and let's bang out a deal here. Take a listen to Mike Johnson, whiny little boy.
In the meantime, Republicans, I don't know what the Democrats are doing other than publicity stunts, but I can tell you the House Republicans are doing some of the most meaningful work of their careers. They are in their districts working around the clock with their constituents, helping them not only to negotiate the crisis that's been created by this Democrat shutdown, but all the other matters that they need to attend to. And I'm hearing from them individually. They are having some of the most meaningful interactions at a time of great crisis with their constituents that they've ever had.
No, they're
that's
not.
That's really, really important.
You,
so
Mike,
wanna...
are you talking about these same people that ditch these that town part. Halls?
They run out the back door because the questions get a little too hard.
Right, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego or Derek Van Orten or Brian Style? And if you're not of that ilk, where's Waldo when we talk about DVO and Weed yeah. and Van Orten and all of these guys? Tom Tiffany. Tom Tiffany is off on the campaign trail. This is the biggest gift you could give him. But even Marjorie Taylor Greene, an ex-post yesterday or today. Hey, I have no respect for the House not being in session passing our bills and the president's executive orders. I demanded to know from Speaker Johnson what the Republican plan for health care is to build the off-ramp for Obamacare and the ACA tax credit. If MTG wants to know, and she's calling this out as garbage, what is the issue?
Every day I feel like I'm living in the upside down when I see Marjorie Taylor Greene tweet, and I'm like, wait, does she have a point? I'm
confused. My goodness. Cal, if you can cue up that sound that we just got dropped from Trump today, that would be great. In the meantime, let's take a listen. We got Charles from Milwaukee. Charles, love you, man. Say hello to Angela. What you got for us?
Hello, Maggie and Angela. So, Angela, I had the same thought process for the first No King. I've been voting since I was able to when I turned 18. I made sure that my kids, not only my son here in Milwaukee, but my daughters in Georgia, my niece and my nephew in Georgia, got out and voted. Every single time I'm on my kids, make sure you vote. But this time, it's different. And I was at the No Kings rally in Milwaukee because they're coming after people that look like you and I. And I have kids and I have three granddaughters. And I don't need any man, especially not a white man, sorry, Maggie, trying to tell my granddaughters what to wear, who they can be with, or anything else, what job they can have. So I was there. I live in Oconomowoc, actually, now. So I wasn't going to do that one. So I didn't want to be the only person of color there. But I made sure my wife and I came down to Milwaukee, because like I said, I have things that I have to fight for, and this administration is trying to take us back, and they're trying to take us way back to a time that wasn't good for people of color before. And so I think everybody, it's like all hands on deck right now. That saying, if you don't mess with politics, politics will mess with you. And we see that in a couple of days, if they don't come up with the deal, there are going to be a lot of people that will lose their SNAP benefits. And tons of MAGA supporters that don't understand that, you're getting government assistance too. I think it's 37% of white people receive food stamps.
Yes. Charles, thank you always.
Thank you for that.
You never have to apologize to me for pointing out
I was like, Charles, you've called in before. I'm here for this.
Right,
yes.
Systemic or individualized racism in this country. I know I'm white. Charles, you're always welcome. Folks, stay right here. I'm going to continue with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. On the other side, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got with me Angela Lang. She's the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities based out of Milwaukee. Angela, before the break, we took a couple callers. And if folks, if you want to join us, 855-752-4842. And we started to get into, you know, who benefits from these programs that Republicans are gutting, right? And at the end of the day, the reality is, whether we're talking about SNAP or the ACA, it is more people in red states, more white folks than any other single demographic. ACA enrollment, 45% of ACA enrollees are Republican or identify as Republican. It's 37% Dem, and basically the rest, they don't care about politics or independence. The 10 hardest hit states measured by the percentage increase in uninsured rates, thanks to the big brutal bill, 7 of those 10 are Republican states: Louisiana, Florida, Arizona, Kentucky, Arkansas, West Virginia, and Oklahoma. 78% of Americans support the ACA tax credits. More than 50% of identified MAGA Republicans support the ACA tax credits. By the way, the only way that anybody who's undocumented gets any health care in this country legally is through EMTALA. That is a Reagan-era signed law. And that EMTALA, total EMTALA spending, which does not get tracked by who gets it. So total emergency healthcare spending in the entire Medicaid pie is 0.4%. And our last caller, Charles, also correct. SNAP recipients, 37%, largest demo of any single demographic. The white folks getting SNAP benefits. White folks going to be going hungry. I wonder if Donald Trump knows about that.
Probably not.
Probably not. Because all of a sudden he'd be like, well, those people that like us, they get the SNAP benefits, but not those Democrat people. I mean, this is so, so frustrating. And again, Marjorie Taylor Greene saying today on X, I demand to know from Speaker Johnson what the Republican plan for healthcare is. So would the rest of America.
So do I.
Angela wants to, I want to know. Don't
we
you
want to know?
Listeners, don't you want to know? But here, this is, again, this is Donald Trump in his debate talking about this very thing. And then a little bit of Mike Johnson yesterday talking about this various thing. They're real clear about exactly how they're going to replace the ACA, make healthcare less expensive and higher quality. Just take a listen to their detailed plans.
Yes or no, you still do not have a plan.
I have concepts of a plan.
When I say that the Republicans have been working on a fix for healthcare, we've been doing this for years.
Where is it, Mike? Legit, at that press conference, he brought out this, like, stack of papers.
Yep.
I was like, that's interesting. Do you mind publishing those? And Marjorie Taylor Greene, in her ex post today, Angela, went even further. She said, Johnson's telling people he's got ideas and pages of policies, and committees of jurisdictions are working on it. But he refused to give one policy proposal to the GOP conference. On their own conference call, she says, apparently we've got to get in a skiff. I think she was kidding about that, to get the plan. Sure. There is no plan, Angela. There's no plan.
There's not a plan. I mean, there's never a plan. And I've said this, and I had very strong feelings because I watched the debate. I was in New York. It was the whole thing. It's one of those moments you remember where you're
yes.
at. And I remember tweeting, like, every woman in leadership recognizes how to have to justify her own and credential herself and justify her own resume across the way from an unqualified white man, right? And I keep thinking about that in terms of Speaker Mike Johnson as well, right? Like, I just don't, I think of affirmative action is what keeps coming up for me in the last like few days because one of my first things in college was like organizing around pro affirmative action. I remember there was a big speaker in California that was against it, a Black man, and understanding that like affirmative action, one, is compassionate, which I think we all could use a little more of, but two, it also directly benefits more white women than others. And mm-hmm. I think that's also the same case for SNAP and other benefits as well. And so I think there's a disconnect. You know, I think of the flooding and FEMA, and, you know, when people need these services, it's very clear, like, these services will only be provided for white folks. If you're not white, you may be in the same circumstance. We're going to find a way to not allow you to have this service, unfortunately. And that's what it feels like right now.
I got one of my lovely conservative callers on the line, Mike from Muscadet. Hi, Mike. Say hello to Angela. What you got for us?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good.
How's it going?
Good.
Good.
So,
how are you?
What's your comment or question?
Well, my comment is, and I appreciate dialogue, and I enjoy your show. I call from time to time, and not that often, but the left has got. The Trumpster, he's always the boogeyman. Who's the next boogeyman? First of all, he was Hitler. You know, well, he wasn't Hitler because he was elected 4 years prior to that. Right? He was president at one time. Now he's the king. Well, he's not the king. So who's your next boogeyman?
I'll just say this. How long has Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden been the boogeyman of the right? Forever.
They're still talking about Biden. And
when are we going to stop talking about Hunter Biden? Donald Trump's the president now with clear dictatorial indications. So people are concerned. Thank you so much to Angela Lang for being here with me and each and every one of you. Mike, I'm always here to continue that discussion, my friend, but don't go anywhere. We're going to talk with attorney Robert Held out of Chicago. He was detained by ICE for over 8 hours. We'll hear his firsthand account next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.